Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We're also trying to connect the dots in this crazy clown world together. We've got a lot of stories to get to on your Wednesday. We're going to look at the day two of the Julian Assange appeals hearing. The prosecution has just rested their case. Now we're waiting basically an answer from the judge. We're going to go to the courthouse and get you an update on what transpired today. What is the prosecution's argument? We're going to look at that in mere moments.
Plus, who killed Alexei Navalny? We have a political analyst and author, Gilbert Doctorow, makes the case that the UK did it. He published this earlier this week, and I gotta say, it's compelling, so we're gonna ask him himself.
Also, another attack on civilian infrastructure inside Donetsk in Russia. This is Russian territory, of course, who voted to become part of Russia. And this was a NATO-backed attack earlier today, striking a hospital in Donetsk. We are going to go there as well. Plus, we're going to look at Justin Trudeau and why were COVID funds to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars being funneled to some of Trudeau's friends? We're going to get to the bottom of all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. And welcome. We are live on this Wednesday. Good to see all of you. Andrew B. in our chat says it was MI6 that killed Navalny. Yeah, wait until you hear this. The British killed Navalny. And a lot of people saying Zebra Strafen TV says British killed Navalny. That makes sense. Yeah, you're going to hear how. Yeah, it's pretty much spot on exactly how this happened coming up in mere moments. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We'd love to see you. We're streaming live right now on YouTube and on Rumble. And of course, this is a very, very important day. We're waiting to find out exactly what this judge is going to do. Now, and the connections that this judge has, of course, to MI6 is also pretty startling in the Julian Assange case.
Which is so interesting because the first judge was compromised, had removed herself from, we talked about that judge whose husband was in the document dump that WikiLeaks exposed. Is there no one else?
Like, you can't find anybody else?
Nobody's impartial here?
Is there any judge that can be impartial in the Julian Assange case that's not tied to MI6? Or the intelligence community that's basically a puppet of the West of the United States. Like, this is, I mean, you couldn't even write. If you try to write this in a novel, somehow people would laugh at you. Be like, this is too unbelievable.
That's trite. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Trite. Go ahead, Philip. Sorry, you were saying.
Oh, I was just going to say, fine, you can talk to me into it. I'll do it. I'll go adjudicate.
You would be better.
Trial. I'll walk in, go, no, I'm done.
Julian? Is Julian here? Oh, no, he's in Belmarsh prison, and because he's sick and he physically can't even come here, yes, you're free to go. You're free to go. And by the way, here, you know, for all of your pain and suffering, here's a tin of biscuits as well, because that's what the British would do, I guess. Give him some tea and biscuits and make him. Send him on his way.
I don't think he's even had those niceties. If you read Nils Melzner's book, The Human Rights Rapporteur for the United Nations, you will be shocked and horrified, and you will stay that way until this guy gets out, which is how I am right now, in a perpetual state of shock and anxiety.
So we're going to go to the courthouse. We have an update from the courthouse in the Julian Assange hearing in just moments. But first, our show today brought to you by our friends over at Indeed. We are driven by searching for better folks. We need better hires, and that's where it comes in for Indeed. Because when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to do a search at all, actually. Don't search, they match with Indeed. So if you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. Over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to their data, and matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You know, we have a lot of people who watch our show that use Indeed, and they've told us stories about it, how it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because they will then, you know exactly what you want, and they're going to surface the candidates that are right for that job right now, leveraging over 140 million qualified preferences every day. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. So here's what you need. Listeners of this show get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/redacted. If you're a small business, you need Indeed to find the right candidates for the job. Just go to Indeed.com/redacted right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast or this, whatever you want to call us, a video, live stream, Indeed.com/redacted. All right, today was day two of the Julian Assange appeals hearing in the UK, and the prosecution rested its case this afternoon. Yesterday, we heard from the defense making compelling arguments, of course, that Julian Assange should not be extradited to the United States, not the least of which is his health problems. He's not seen his family. And yes, he is not doing very well in Belmarsh prison. Also, this is politically motivated. And you cannot extradite someone when it's politically motivated. That literally is part of the statute. So all of those compelling arguments yesterday, were they undone today by the prosecution laying out their case in front of the judge? Independent journalist Taylor Hudak is in the courthouse over the past few days, and she's been doing an amazing job covering what the defense and now the prosecution have been saying. And she filed this report for Redacted just a short time ago outside the courthouse.
Of Justice in London. We just wrapped up day two of the appeal hearing in the extradition proceedings of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Now, similar to yesterday when I arrived at the courthouse, despite the rain, there were hundreds of protesters gathered outside to demonstrate their support. And you can still see there are people behind me outside the courthouse showing their support for free speech and Julian Assange. Now, inside the courtroom today, the Crown Prosecution Service, representing the U.S. government, presented their rebuttal to the defense arguments that were presented yesterday. Claire Dobbin, for the prosecution, spent quite a bit of time addressing the association between Julian Assange and whistleblower Chelsea Manning. It was Manning who leaked documents on the Iraq and Afghanistan wars to Julian Assange, which he then published through WikiLeaks. Now, on this point, Dobbin, for the prosecution, made several attempts to separate Assange's activities from that of a journalist, stating that Assange encouraged and solicited Manning to provide more information and that he publicly asked others to provide material to WikiLeaks. Now, of course, this is news-gathering techniques that journalists engage in all the time. You encourage your sources to provide more information, and to seek to criminalize this behavior will set a dangerous global precedent. One must also ask, is it right for judges, politicians, and state officials to determine who is and who is not a journalist? Is it up to public officials to decide what is responsible journalism? Now, moving on to a related point, the prosecution repeatedly stated that WikiLeaks published the names of informants in their releases and thus potentially put lives at risk. This was strongly countered by the defense, in which they argued that WikiLeaks actually took the time to redact the names. It was one of the media partners who published in his book the password to a media file, which included those documents unredacted. Right after Assange had learned of this at the time, he went to great lengths to reduce harm. In fact, he had a phone call, which has been published on Project Veritas, which was also verified by WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Kristen Raffenson as authentic, in which Assange warns the State Department about this incident of the circulating password. Also, other organizations were the first to publish the documents unredacted. Even the judge today made a point to the prosecution stating that by the time WikiLeaks had published this information, redacted by the way, the publications were already available on several websites. So this does raise the question, why is WikiLeaks being prosecuted? This argument points to a very important point here, that this is in fact a selective prosecution. The defense made another very strong point, stating that the prosecution is relying on the U.S.-UK extradition treaty to prosecute Assange, but they ignore the safeguards and protections within the treaty, namely Article 4, which prevents extradition for political offenses. But the prosecution instead cites the UK Extradition Act, which is domestic law and does not include a provision which prevents extradition for political offenses. Now, this hearing has, of course, concluded. It is wrapped up. This was the final day, and it is up to these two judges to to examine the evidence presented and then issue a decision. At the end of the hearing this afternoon, the judges stated that they will stay the decision, and they ordered for both parties, the defense and prosecution, to submit the relevant documents in the coming weeks. Now, there's just a few more points that I want to share with the viewers that are important to note. If Assange is extradited to the United States, he would be tried in the Eastern District Court of Virginia, where no national security defendant has ever won a case. It is highly likely that the jury would be comprised of members of the intelligence community, their family members and friends. This has also been discussed by former CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou. Therefore, the jury would be highly prejudiced against Assange. He would also be subjected to SAMs, or special administrative measures, which is beyond just solitary confinement. Given that he is charged with espionage, he would not be able to provide a public interest defense. So those are just a few points. I'm barely scratching the surface here on what he could face in a U.S. prison. That's all I have for today. That concludes the hearing as well. I will continue to cover this case. As soon as we have a decision, I will report on it for Activism Munich. And you could also follow my updates, of course, on Telegram at Taylor Hudak. My channel is Taylor Hudak Media. I'm also on Twitter at _TaylorHudak. And I also do report for The Last American Vagabond. So again, a great pleasure to be back here to provide you all with the updates. Now is a very important point in this case. As I said yesterday, talk to your friends, family members, neighbors, raise awareness. Don't stop fighting for your rights and for your right to know and have access to truthful information. Thank you guys for having me again, and have a great rest of your show.
Yes. Like, how is that a fair jury that you're going to get in the United States?
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable to think that that's...
And that the same freedoms and rules that we have don't apply to him. The
right.
human interest rules or anything like that, that we can just pluck... I mean, that's terrifying that the United States can just pluck people from other places and be like, get in here, we're going to torture you for doing what we don't like.
I mean, I do want to call out something she pointed out, which I think is really telling, that the judge pushed back and pointed out that this information... redacted was already sent out, was mm-hmm. already made, of course, was public. This yeah. was already available. And then when WikiLeaks published it, redacted, it had already been out there.
Right.
So this was, why hasn't anyone else been prosecuted for this? Why has, yeah. why you're just going after Julian Assange for this? Interesting. So we're now going to await this judge's response. Again, it
Could come whenever.
It could come whenever. I mean, and we won't know. I mean, and she makes the point, of course, that in the past they have waited weeks, months to render a decision here. So we could be sitting waiting for this. Imagine.
The temperature is hot on this one, though. And like she says, you know, tell your representatives, tell yeah. your friends, tell everyone who's willing to get worked up over this, to get worked up over this. And maybe it helps. You know, I'm just holding on to this collective energy.
We've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. That is, of course, a big story, the Julian Assange story that we're most focused on. We're also very focused on the international outrage about Alexei Navalny. Who actually killed Alexei Navalny? As the Russians responded over the past 24 hours, it's so interesting that the West was so quick, within 50 minutes, to come out and tell us how he died when they didn't even know about it. Well, now we have answers to actually who potentially killed Alexei Navalny. And we're going to get to that in mere moments with Gilbert Doctorow. We've got a number of other great guests coming up here on the show, which we're going to get to in a second. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at The Wellness Company, because we never know what's going to happen. Is there another pandemic coming? Is there another lockdown? You just don't know. Right now, just this week, the World Health Organization is yelling at the top of their lungs that disease X is coming, and they want to put us back in lockdowns. So you know what you can do to prepare yourself is make sure that you've got a kit of medicines and life-saving treatments from The Wellness Company. They have a travel emergency kit as well, whether you're backpacking through exotic locations or jet-setting for work. The kit ensures that you're prepared for any health situation. How is this different from other kits? The one that I put together for my kids, for instance, with Band-Aids and those little plastic teeth that I always carry.
Right.
Clayton knows I always have those little plastic teeth because I always have a child that's losing a tooth, so I need to put that loose tooth I don't think this is in the wellness company, but if you want those, I can tell
you. No, but you can get ivermectin with them. Wellness company has ivermectin in there, which is great.
They also have 6 versatile prescription medications, additional over-the-counter meds, and key supplies such as iodine, gauze, and bandages. I refer you to a great video from Dr. John Campbell on YouTube about why you need iodine in case of a nuclear fallout. That's interesting. Doesn't hurt to have that. There's also a comprehensive guidebook, like having a doctor in tow no matter where you travel. So if you're going somewhere where there's no doctor, make sure that you have a kit in tow. So right now, go to the wellness company at twc.health/redacted. Use the code redacted at checkout to save 10%. You can travel smart, travel prepared with the wellness company's travel emergency kit. Kits are only available in the USA. One more time, that's the wellness company, twc.health/redacted. Did the Brits kill Alexei Navalny? That's what my guest today says may have happened, because there are some fingerprints if we're brave enough to follow them. It's not the craziest thing. The West supported Navalny all along. They called him Vladimir Putin's main opposition. We know that was not true. My guest today has been warning us about escalation with Russia for decades, Gilbert Doctorow. He's the author on many books about Russian-U.S. relations. He has a new book out called The Belgian Perspective on International Relations. Thank you for joining us again. I introduce you to Gilbert Doctorow.
My pleasure to join you.
Okay, so let's get right down to it. You say that the Brits benefit the most from a false flag in the concept of cui bono. Who benefits? Can you explain that?
Well, the Brits benefit because they are the leading force for the American war on Russia now. The Brits are very deeply involved. There is every reason to believe that the successful strikes on Russian Black Sea Fleet naval vessels by surface or submarine drones launched ostensibly by Ukrainians were actually delivered and possibly even fired by British instructors and advisors on site. The British have done what they can over the last 2 years to cause disruption in Russia, to cause physical harm to Russian armed forces, and to discredit the Russian government in every imaginable way. What we see in looking at the Navalny case is precisely that last type of activity of the Brits. If we go back to the period of Bush Jr., when the Iraq War was facilitated, was enabled by the British joining, coming to the aid of Bush, when so many other countries were sharply criticizing the United States and denying it the backing of the UN, which it so sought. If we go back to then, it was common to say that Tony Blair was the American lapdog. What we see now in British behavior is more like the Hound of the Baskervilles. I think they have moved out from under the American umbrella and are, at their own risk and peril, going very far in pursuing what is a barely concealed war on Russia. And they do this in the expectation that the Russians will not respond. That is an expectation that is wearing thin, and I would be happy to get to that bit further. But I'd like to put this...
Wait, if I may...
Yeah, sure.
So what you're saying is that the British could be motivated to do this on their own, even though usually we see them as a lapdog of the United States policy, and that Russia could actually respond by saying, if you did this, Alexei Navalny, as odious as he was still one of our own, and we will respond. That would be unthinkable from the narrative that we know.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to point out the latest news.
Okay.
It is highly likely. I'm obliged to use Theresa May's famous highly likely, which was what she used persistently in finding the Russians guilty of everything imaginable. It is highly likely that the Russians have already responded. You will note in today's news that the Houthis have sunk a British naval vessel in the Red Sea. I will wager that they did that with Russian arms. In the last 2 days, on the highly respected and widely followed talk show, An Evening with Vladimir Solovyov, the host himself said, "You know, to the West, you are pursuing proxy wars against us. Beware, we are also capable of pursuing proxy wars against you." And you note the sinking of a Qatari oil transport in the Red Sea a couple of days ago. As Solovyov mentioned, we don't know who supplied them with the arms. We don't know. So I would wager that the Russians have already done something they've talked about a long time, to sink British Navy vessels without any chance of being made to pay a price.
Wow. Okay. One of the things the Russians have said was, why did the West come out within hours of Navalny's death and say, "Oh, we absolutely know who did it and how they did it"? Now they're bringing out the sort of old playbook of Novichok. It's almost trite to use Novichok. What you pointed out is it's the British who have Novichok. The United States do too, but the Russians haven't made it since, I think, the 80s or 90s, correct?
That's correct. It's very good that you mentioned the Skripal case, because that was one of two or three points that I will call circumstantial evidence that I say links the Brits to what happened to Mr. Navalny. It was the what happened, his death, was not just any day of the week or any month of the year. It was very well timed for several important anniversaries and for what was going on in the midst of news of Navalny's death. That what was going on in the midst of the death was the Munich Security Conference, where the great and the mighty of the collective West were assembled for the purpose of condemning Russia's war and for shaking down the U.S. Congress for further financial and military aid to Ukraine. So that was one point of the interesting date when Navalny was put to death. Another point, it takes us back to the British directly. The Skripal case occurred in March of 2018, just less than a month before the presidential elections for which Mr. Putin was standing for re-election. We are now in the month of March. On the 17th, 15th to the 17th of March, there are new Russian presidential elections. Once again, we have a suspicious death. Once again, there is talk of perhaps poisoning. And the British are masters of this. This would be, the British have lost their armies. They have lost their empire. They are in the course of losing what's little left of their fleet. But they have been and remain world-class planners and implementers of what we call false flag operations. And the death of Navalny is a false flag operation perpetrated by some outside force. Let us assume that I'm right, and it's the British, and laid at the door of Mr. Putin. That's a false flag.
Yes. Although, I'm going to put this small, let's just leave room for this one doubt. If you read the Jacques Bode book, he talks about the blood work that was published by The Lancet, by the German hospital, which showed that he was not otherwise a healthy person. He was on medications that may have been related to either Parkinson's, cancerous tumors, or both. Is there maybe a possibility that it was his time? I don't know. He still was pretty young. I don't put a lot of stock into that either. Your face shows no.
Yeah. Well, look, the timing is just too good.
Yeah.
As I said, it's the anniversary of the Skripal case in a former Russian election. The Skripal case is all about Novichok, which was being made in a chemical warfare laboratory very close to Salisbury, where they were, where the Skripal father and daughter fell ill, and we have the coincidence that Mr. Navalny's wife, now widow, who just happened to be in Munich at the time so that she could make a guest appearance and condemn Mr. Putin for his vicious murder of her husband. These are very nice coincidences. But let's go back to your question about his being ill. Yes, he was a sick man. Some of it may have been from genetic or other bad luck, illness, chronic illnesses that he came down with. But it is also widely known that Mr. Navalny took narcotics. It is also known that his, because people have asked, oh, how could the Brits possibly have brought some poison into this very remote place under close watch? It was a high security prison colony, after all. How could they do that? Well, I'd like to mention one detail, that Mr. Navalny's lawyer saw him 2 days before he died. And it is not inconceivable that he was used, he was duped by British intelligence agents or other intelligence agencies to give Mr. Navalny some medication or some narcotics or who knows what, which he took in good faith. Now, the other possibility, which is, I think, is very real, an answer to questions, again, how could the Brits do this, is that the British have very close cooperation with Ukrainian intelligence agents across Russia. And there are many such agents. We know that because of very little discussed, but real cases of sabotage that are going on daily in various places across the enormous expanse of the Russian Federation. And these cases of sabotage, of course, are being carried out by people in the pay of Ukrainian intelligence agents or the agents themselves. They are all native Russian speakers. They can pass for Russians without any problem. There's no Cockney accent to pick up or betray them. And minority migrant faces calling themselves Brits to show up in Russia. No. These are native speakers. They will go anywhere. And if you come to that place, if you come in the near to this prison camp, money will certainly get you what you want, access to inmates. And inmates will, for money, very happily murder Mr. Navalny. So it's no great difficulty. If the will is there, the way is there.
This is like a cross between Stranger Things and a Bourne movie. It's so compelling as a spy story, but tragic that it's true. Now, here's the last question I'd like to ask. Is there a possibility that the U.S. government is alarmed by this possibility that their lapdog has gone rogue, the United Kingdom? And is there any way that maybe they could call back the dogs?
I don't believe there is. The other lapdog, although it's a bit peculiar to apply to it, to Israel, the title lapdog, the other country that receives massive support and is America's closest ally in the region, Israel, is out of control. The Biden administration is unable to bring Netanyahu's government to heel. So in this real situation that is operating in parallel to, but separate from what we are now discussing, the United States cannot control this agent. So why should we be surprised if the British government is out of U.S. control?
Yikes. Okay, this is so fascinating. I want to say thank you again for bringing this to our attention and suggest that our audience go to gilbertdoctorow.com to follow his works, his essays, and also I believe you have a new book coming out about the Ukraine conflict as well, right?
Yes, in the next 3 or 4 months I'll be publishing, republishing essays that I've written in the last 2 years as kind of diaries, war diaries. So I hope that readers will find that to be useful as well.
I find your work very useful. I even read your old works about Russia because it helps me to see that the writing has been on the wall and this sort of, oh, Putin all of a sudden did these crazy things. It's just a stupid narrative that the West assumes that those of us who haven't followed it are stupid enough to buy. So thank you again for coming back on Redacted, and I hope to have you on again another time.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks so much, Gilbert. Great stuff.
All right, so play that out just for a second. Imagine that Russia responds and retaliates.
And they don't do it with fanfare.
This is something... the death of Alexei Navalny. Because even though they don't like him, for the most part, he's an unpopular character.
They're like, he was a Russian citizen, and the British just came in here and killed him.
And you can't do that, so now we're going to retaliate. That narrative will just not fit in the square peg round hole that they're trying to serve us, this pile of steaming shit about Alexei Navalny right now.
Go ahead, David.
And you know what really irritates me is, like, you see all these bleeding heart posts about Navalny on Twitter and all these other websites and all the mainstream media. But what did we see for Gonzalo Lira? Nothing. Yeah.
No, and the Russians brought this up in the past 24 hours in a press conference. You know, like, oh, you were so quick to immediately, within 50 minutes, 50 minutes, the West was telling the rest of the world how Navalny died in a Russian prison. How does the West know that? And yet you have not mentioned one thing about Gonzalo Lira. I'm not defending Russia at all in this. All I'm pointing out is the hypocrisy of this. So there's been nothing. No White House press corps asking Corinne Jean-Pierre about the death of Gonzalo Lira, American journalist. No outrage, no follow-up questions about it at all.
Yeah, but it's also just disconcerting that the United States may have thought that they had these dogs on a leash. The dogs, meaning Israel and the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Sorry if you're from those places. I know it doesn't feel good to hear that. Doesn't feel good to say
No, so many people in our chat are like, clearly MI6 was behind this.
Right.
And responsible.
And then you're like, oh, crap. Yeah. Our Frankenstein is out. Our monster is out. We can't put the horse back in the barn. What do we do now? That means we're all screwed.
Let us know in the comments. What do you guys think on YouTube and Rumble tonight and X? We're streaming live on all those platforms. Maybe we put up a poll, David. Maybe we put up a poll and we can see here. Do you believe that MI6 was responsible for... Do you believe the British government was responsible for Navalny's death? Yes or no? Let us know in the comments, like, what you guys think about that. It's an unbelievable... It really is amazing, though, when you think about it. And the Russians would likely do it without fanfare. This is something we're reminded of all the time, that they would carry out maybe these attacks that are happening now in the Red Sea, and they're not going to be broadcasting or celebrating it.
Right.
So
I did not know that Alexei Navalny, despite my research, was a user of narcotics and that it would be all that easy, that, you know, all too easy to carry out something like that. So let us know what you found surprising about that. We have more news to get to. We're going to talk about, what are we talking about? Yes.
We're going to talk about we're going to talk about Justin Trudeau, and we're going to talk about all of these millions of dollars that have suddenly somehow gone missing over the course of many, many months, COVID money that somehow wound up in the pockets of Justin Trudeau's friends. This story is unbelievable. And of course, when Justin Trudeau is confronted about these questions, he runs out of the floor of Parliament. Like, it's kind of weird to watch. Like, when the opposition, when Pierre Poilievre stands up there and questions, where is this money? Justin Trudeau's like, I guess my lunch is ready in the break room. I got to get out of here. And he runs up the steps like a little girl. He runs out of there. And he's like, somebody else answer for me. Like, somebody else answer that question. I got to go. My hot pocket is done.
That Trudeau response is usually like, grab what's her name, and then like shove her in front and be like, here, talk to her.
Oh,
I'm out of here.
Yeah, her name?
What, Chrystia Freeland?
Chrystia Freeland.
They're like, yeah, she'll muffle some questions. I got to go get my hot pocket out of the microwave.
I got Dolores Umbridge to put in front of the microphone. I'm going to go.
So that poll is up, by the way.
All right, the poll is up, and the question is, David, what is the question?
Do you believe MI6 is responsible for Alexei Navalny's death? And we're 83% yes, 17% no, with 500 votes so far.
Yep, there we go. So get your votes in now.
Did you think that, follow-up question, did you think that before Gilbert Doctorow presented that? Because this was not something that had come to my mind, so...
My initial reaction... was CIA. Like, it just automatically CIA. So it's like I knew that it was like some organization like that that we will never know in secret.
Yeah. I thought it was the West immediately. I mean, just like Nord Stream pipeline bombing, anybody with a brain would immediately jump to that conclusion if you're educated anyway.
Well, that's one of the reasons, and the fact that he already was a sickly person. And also now learning about these other habits, you know, some of the major headlines we saw was that he was bruised, you know, when they found his body. Well, again, that doesn't prove all that much. So, yeah. Sorry, I got distracted. I saw my bra strap was showing.
Okay. someone would just ask, what is going on with Assange? Well, we're live right now. So if you missed the beginning of our show, we started live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. If you missed the beginning of the show, you can watch can repeat, you can scroll back and watch the beginning of it because we had a full report on the very latest on that. So, yes. And someone said, Spang in the chat says CIA and MI6 are the same thing. Yeah, that's essentially the case. All right, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about COVID and Justin Trudeau in just moments. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Hillsdale College. Now, if you're watching this show, you are, like us, a lifelong learner. And did you know that you can take courses and things that maybe not be enrolled in a school and just take things that you're interested in? History, economics, great works of literature, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution. If you studied these things in school or it's just been a while, maybe you'd like to brush up and just have a place to be learning? Well, that's why we want to introduce you to Hillsdale College. They're offering more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subject. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, stories in the Book of Genesis, the meaning of the Constitution. All of that is free. We want to recommend that you sign up for American Citizenship and Its Decline. It's more than just what you learn here. The professor is Victor David Hansen. It's an 8-lecture course, and Dr. Hansen explores the history of citizenship in the West and the threats it faces today, like the erosion of the middle class. We talk about that here a lot. The disappearance of our borders, check. The growth of an unaccountable deep state, yes. You can study these things even further for yourself. The course is self-paced, so you can start whenever and wherever. So start your free course, American Citizenship and Its Decline, with Victor Davis Hansen today, and explore the other courses as well. Right now, go to hillsdale.edu/redacted to start. It's free and easy to get started. Once again, that's hillsdale.edu/redacted to get started. One more time, hillsdale.edu/redacted.
No joke, I'm just signing up right now because this is fast.
Like, that's
why,
well,
I was a history major in college, so this is near and dear to my heart. So I'm just signing up right now, and I'm not blowing smoke. So hillsdale.edu/redacted. I'm going to take this course on American citizenship and its decline. So maybe we should all take it. It's free. Isn't that crazy?
Take it. Hillsdale College in South Bend, Indiana?
It's in Hillsdale, Michigan.
Okay, because I know I've seen it. I've been by that college because I used to live in that area.
Okay. Yeah, it's Hillsdale. This one, at least their address here is in Michigan, but maybe there's another campus.
Yeah,
but
this does look fun.
So, take it. It's for free, and it's awesome. Education, free information. Great.
Readers are leaders, you guys.
Yes. Exactly. All right. Over the past few days, of course, the town of Avdiivka in Ukraine has collapsed, basically. Russian forces, of course, have advanced significantly on that area, and what's remaining is surrender and the remnants of Ukrainian soldiers. In the meantime, Patrick Lancaster has been trying to get to that area to bring us a report, but it's incredibly treacherous. As he was about to leave again from Donetsk to move on, a civilian hospital was attacked and bombed. And we now have confirmation since his report that it was NATO shelling of this hospital. So NATO shells used to attack a civilian hospital just a short time ago. Patrick Lancaster is in Donetsk. He's at this hospital, and he filed this short report for us, and we wanted to bring you this update.
Hello, Redacted. I'm Patrick Lancaster, and right now we're at the Kalinina Hospital in center Donetsk. And just moments ago, Ukraine launched a rocket attack on this hospital. This is the last of many times in over the years that Ukraine has fired on this hospital, civilian hospital. We see that a rocket had exploded on the roof, and the motor went through this and lodged here in the floor. We just saw the emergency services remove what was left of the rocket. Now, if we look around, this room is an ultrasound room here in this laboratory department of the hospital. Civilian hospital, no military here, under attack by Ukrainian forces again. All right, so we see it came from the direction of 273 degrees. Anybody can look on the map and see where the Kalinina Hospital is and see that it came from directly that direction.
Украинским режимом в очередной раз было нападение на гражданский объект. Это Республиканская клиническая больница имени Калинина. Уже, к сожалению, не в первый раз в нее прилетают снаряды с украинской стороны. Сегодня было использовано РСЗО «Град». Пострадал у нас лабораторный корпус, корпус лабораторной диагностики. Вот. К счастью, в нем не находились пациенты. Вот. К сожалению, у нас пострадала одна сотрудница, это лаборант. Угу. Ранение было не тяжелое, помощь оказана в полном объеме. Сейчас ее жизни ничего не угрожает.
А какие там меры у вас еще там предусматриваются в таких ситуациях, поскольку это не первый прилет?
Ну, в первую очередь у нас самое главное – это безопасность пациентов. На время обстрела мы, конечно, постараемся пациентов вывести в безопасное место, это коридоры по возможности. Вот. Ну и, естественно, сейчас самое главное – это быстрая ликвидация последствий обстрела для того, чтобы здание могло функционировать и больница без всяких ограничений.
Расскажите нам, пожалуйста, о больнице. Это вообще-то больница, она военное назначение или гражданское? И сколько она обслуживает населения?
Это самая крупная больница в Донецкой Народной Республике. Это ведущее наше учреждение, где оказывается весь объем медицинской помощи, в том числе высокотехнологичный. Здесь лечится в основном у нас гражданское население. Это больница для гражданского населения.
Если о цифрах поясника есть, там какой-то там цифра, сколько почти больных лежат?
Нет, нету, да? Сейчас нету.
Спасибо большое.
Да.
Коллеги, есть сколько у кого еще?
Можно представить?
Благодарю.
Гарцев Дмитрий Анатольевич, исполняющий обязанности министра здравоохранения Донецкой Народной Республики.
Спасибо.
Спасибо, коллеги.
Чей хвост остался?
Привет, это снова я.
All right, we've come out to the street here in front of building number 7 of Kalinina Hospital. And we see this is a laboratory. Look, it's right there. Beeline laboratory where they do testing. And we can see, as you saw, up in the corner of the building is where the impact happened, the explosion, and the motor came through. Now, this could... This could be a grad or a NATO vampire rocket. Basically the same rocket, a little differences, but same caliber and still launched on civilians here in Donetsk. This has been a special report for Redacted.
All right. So thank you to Patrick there. So just speaking with Patrick a few moments ago and said, thanks to this laboratory, thanks that they struck the laboratory part of the building, that more people weren't injured as a result of that. So, thankfully, luckily, that is the case. NATO weapons being once again used to target civilian infrastructure. And someone in the chat just said they hit the hospital again. Yes, they hit the hospital again. This is what's happening right now. So, yes. So let's, before we move on to more news here, we're going to talk about what happened with Justin Trudeau and this COVID money, and also free and fair voting, because there's a big, we have a big debate coming up on the 29th of February. It'll be a broadcast debate, 5 presidential candidates coming together because you chose these candidates to be at this event, hoping that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be there, Cornel West as well. And we're going to talk about how we can actually get back to free and fair elections in the United States. We have a special guest who's going to be joining us on that. But let's tell you about our store first, because we have some brand new merch in our store if you'd like to support independent journalism. You can go to redactedstore.com. We've got our new farmers, farmers t-shirts in there, which is no food.
No farmers, no food.
Yeah, no farmers, no food. We've also got our non-pacifist peace extremist t-shirts in there. One of our hottest selling, of course, is the I Will Not Comply. Someone in the chat just said they just got their Friends Don't Let Friends Watch the Mainstream Media mug, which is great. Great way to kick off your morning. So check out, if you'd like to support independent journalism, support what we do here, please go to redactedstore.com. Redactedstore.com. Did Justin Trudeau in Canada use COVID as a way to line his own pockets and those of his friends with giant fat contracts? Well, that's exactly the charge being leveled right now by Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre. Watch this.
The Prime Minister's arrive scam is now flailing out of control. Today, revelations from a Joël Denis Bellavance that one arrive scan company received $250 million in contracts. Let's get this straight. It's a company with four employees, headquartered in the basement of a tiny cottage. They got IT contracts, even though they admit they do no IT work. $250 million? WTF.
Here, here.
WTF is right. And Poilievre has asked the RCMP to expand their, quote, criminal investigation into the Trudeau government's use of this. So what exactly is he being accused of here? Let's ask Canadian journalist David Creighton, who, David, you just wrote a piece for the Post-Millennial on this. So what exactly is Poilievre saying? What is the RCMP looking into here? What did Trudeau potentially violate?
Well, what the RCMP needs to look into and what Parliament needs to continue to look into is how an app that was supposed to cost $80,000 ended up costing $60 million. That's about a 750 times increase. And just so your viewers understand, what is an arrive can? Well, like a lot of cute sounding Canadian devices, it had nefarious reasons for being invented, and it didn't work. And that's the thing. It was supposed to be an app. If you came back into Canada or you're entering Canada from another country, this Arrive Can app was supposed to make it easier to get into the country so you could prove you had your two vaccines, which at the time was absolutely necessary. You couldn't even travel in Canada without having two vaccinations. You couldn't leave the country. You couldn't come back into the country. So the Arrive Can app was supposed to make things easier. And it was supposed to cost, get this, $80,000. The whole thing. And it ended up costing at least $60 million. But here's the kicker, Clayton. We don't even know if $60 million is accurate. That's a conservative estimate, no pun intended, small c conservative estimate by the Auditor General of Canada. Now, if there's one office left in Canada that is purely nonpartisan, I would say it's probably the Auditor General. I don't trust National Defense. I don't trust CSIS. I don't trust the RCMP for being nonpartisan. But the Auditor General seems to have her stuff together. And Karen Hogan revealed last week that this app had gone 750 times over budget. But here's what she said. The Canadian Border Services Agency's documentation, financial records, and controls were so poor that we were unable to determine the precise cost of the Arrive Can application. Using the information that was available, we estimated the cost at approximately $59.5 million, Hogan wrote in her Auditor General report. So it's at least $60 million for an app that didn't work. And that's the thing that just, is this a third world country, Clayton? This is what I keep asking you about, about Justin Trudeau's Canada, because not only is Trudeau responsible for this, he gets up in the House of Commons last week and once again distracts. Not my problem. Let's talk to that guy over there, please, because I'm not really responsible for the government and the spending that goes on here. And Pierre Poilievre, conservative leader, was quite right to say that this was just unacceptable. And obviously, this app had more to do with Justin Trudeau putting money into the pockets of his friends, as he said in the House of Commons, than doing anything for Canadians, as Trudeau kept insisting. This is all about making Canadians safe. Yeah, right.
Can you address the paper trail issue here? Because it would seem to me we would know, we would be able to track. I mean, I built an iPhone application years ago, a speed reading app years ago, just to read the news a little bit more quickly. I mean, this was a hobby project of mine many, many years ago. It ended up being like a top app in the App Store, and it cost me all in the amount of money I spent on like $15,000. Now, granted, it's not a massive national app that's using servers to track individuals with vaccine passports and everything else, but the cost overrun here is unbelievable. Clearly, there's a paper trail here. No, they can't find where this money's going.
This is like a company that just didn't keep their books, which would, of course, get you in jail in normal society. Somehow, Justin Trudeau keeps staying out of jail. And the Liberal cabinet ministers who are directly implicated are apparently doing an investigation. In the past, they have been reluctant to investigate this prime minister, illustrating once again how partisan the RCMP in Canada has become. But here's an interesting side note that Pierre Polyev discovered along with La Presse, which is a Montreal-based newspaper. The first company that got involved with this act was called GC Strategies Incorporated. Now, these are four guys sitting in their basement, and they willingly acknowledge that they don't know anything about IT. But yet, this was the first company hired to work on the app. And it's been revealed that they have, since Trudeau came to power, they have collected $258 million in government contracts. Four guys in their basement. Now, suddenly they're off the government procurement list. I wonder why. Because it's been revealed these guys have been collecting this much money. I don't know very many companies of four people who get that kind of government contract revenue.
Well, with no experience. Outrageous. Yeah, and with no experience. We don't work in IT, but we're going to be the guys that are going to provide the IT back end for this application. Do we know of any other individuals, I guess through this, what they want, obviously a criminal investigation here, close contacts of Trudeau that would have made money off of this scam?
Well, that's the purpose and the point of widening this investigation, because clearly the books were not being kept for a very good reason, because the costs were going so far over budget. And I believe because the people benefiting from these cost overruns were friends of the Liberal Party. This has happened in the past with Trudeau. And I have to ask the question, has Canada become a third world country where the government can spend literally millions of dollars on its friends and just say, hey, we're in the pandemic, boys. It had nothing to do with corruption. We were just trying to make Canadians safe. This had everything to do with just making a system that worked. Not only did it not work, this kind of corruption is not working for Canadians. We used to be a country that didn't have this kind of naked corruption. We've become a third world nation over this, and it is so troublesome. And unfortunately, the House is not sitting this week. I think Polyev had Trudeau on the ropes last week with this. And of course, every time you do that, though, he gets up from his seat, runs away from the House of Commons. Polyev had him cornered in question period. Trudeau was sputtering and stuttering, left the House, once again, handed the bag over to another minister to try to answer the questions. He started stuttering and sputtering too. But the question period is off for the week. The House is not sitting this week. How convenient. So the pressure is off. But I'm telling everybody I know in the opposition to keep the pressure on. It's not just $60 million. It's not just $60 million is a drop in the bucket for this government, for any government. But it's the fact that there was this naked corruption going on and that they think they can get away with it. They think they can walk away with this and say, COVID, COVID, COVID. That's what they do all the time. Every time they're caught in a lie, every time they're caught in corruption, it was the pandemic. Couldn't help it. Not good enough anymore. It was not good enough at the time. It's not good enough now. I think we're all sick of these excuses, these pathetic excuses from a tired, lying prime minister.
Hallelujah. Well, we'll be seeing here if the fire, because to me, where there's smoke, there's fire. So we start looking into these four guys in the basement. Where else was the cost overruns? Follow the money. I think we're going to see some really interesting things if individuals can follow this money. We can actually get a clear paper trail. And maybe this comes out through part of this criminal investigation or through litigation, through a discovery process. So I hope we get to see some of these documents. David Creighton, always great to see you. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Clayton.
Thanks so much, David. Appreciate it. And we're just getting word here, like right there at the end here, is like that YouTube just stopped our stream. So I guess that's how it rolls in the age of censorship.
I wonder if that's What if that's Trudeau-backed censorship, or if that's the Navalny-backed censorship, or the Assange-backed censorship?
I was wondering about the poll. We put up a poll that said, do you believe MI6 is responsible for Alexei Navalny's death? And I was like, I don't know. Back then, yeah. Let's see. MI6 is flagging this.
Then I guess that's why we're taken down on YouTube. So, yeah, but we are still streaming live right now on X and Rumble. Knock on wood. So hopefully you guys are joining us there and maybe spilled over from that. So that's the way we roll. But anyway, we've got another story we want to get to on free and fair elections. Imagine without being censored, without being told by the deep state who you're going to vote for in this next election. Candidates being foisted on you by the Pentagon. That's exactly what we have right now. Nikki Haley in tears yesterday up on the podium. I'm not giving up. I've got so many military backers that are demanding that I stay in this thing. I'm their only hope right now. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, do you find yourself with a substantial amount of cash that's currently idle, not generating returns? Maybe you've got money like in a savings account. Well, it's currently losing value, right? Well, it's high time that you explore the trading app that I've started using, Moomoo. Now, it offers an impressive 5.1 API plus an additional 3% API right now for your uninvested cash. So you can open the account. You don't even have to invest any money in the stock market or ETFs or bonds or whatever. Just keep it in the account and it'll earn you 8.1 API. That's unbelievable. That's way better than any savings account out there right now. So, I mean, think about that. I use this app for trading, and I was waiting to see what NVIDIA was going to do today in the market and all of this, and paying attention to how that's going to affect AI stocks and everything else. And so I have cash sitting there, and where do I have it sitting? I have it sitting there earning 8.1% right now, even before I deploy it. So you can too, and it has it's one of the highest interest rates that I know of. What I love about Moomoo is it stands out by offering zero commissions, no platform fees for stocks, options, ETFs. It's packed with powerful market analysis features, absolutely free. For example, now is the U.S. stock market earnings season. Right now, again, NVIDIA today, right? Financial data, analyst ratings, all of it, earnings calendar, and more is all free to use, and it's all built in right into their app. And the 6.8% margin rate is one of the lowest that I've come across in the industry. So you can tap into pro-level tools and information absolutely free. Sign up using my link below, grab up to 15 free stocks, and park your idle funds on Moomoo for a sweet 8.1% API right now. Or earn up to $5,000 in cash rewards when you transfer assets to Moomoo. But you have to use our link there on your screen. Just go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. And you're also going to, by the way, get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Redacted.inc/Moomoo. Well, imagine a United States of America where you, the voter, got to pick your next president. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? Seems like that's a thing of the past now at this stage of the game. It's actually the concept, though, behind a movement called Free and Equal Elections, which is dedicated to letting voters hear from all candidates and not just the corporate chosen few or the ones that the deep state chooses, like Nikki Haley, or the military-industrial complex, like those types of individuals. Next week, on February 29th at 8 p.m., the Free and Equal Elections is putting on a massive debate, televised debate. It will be on Rumble. It'll be on multiple platforms. And it's going to be televised with five of the seven presidential candidates that the people have chosen to come and hear from. And to tell us more about this, and I think this is an amazing movement, instead of just the corporate-backed candidates that we get to see on CNN or something, but we're actually going to see real people that Americans voted for. This is exciting. Christina Tobin is from Free and Equal Elections, and this is her mission. So just exciting. First of all, can you talk a little bit about the event next week on the 29th? Hopefully, and we'll try to make sure that we promote it in our newsletter as well so people can watch it that night in the United States. But just tell us about the event first, and then we'll get into how all of this came together.
Sure. Well, Clayton, thanks to you and Natalie and the Redacted team for everything you do to stand up and really give a voice to the people, independent media. And that's what we are at the debates. We're an independent debate. I've been in the electoral arena for 25 years. I stand as electoral reform expert since I was 17 years of age. I'm 42 now. And 15 years ago, in 2008, I served as the National Ballot Access Coordinator for independent Ralph Nader. And that sparked the creation of Free and Equal Elections. Has been hosting presidential debates for 15 years. This year, we have broken out to a presidential debate series. We plan to have up to maybe even 6 presidential debates this year. We had one several weeks ago at the Chelsea Television Studios, and we are now having a second debate February 29th. At Chelsea Television Studios in New York. The people have voted in through 330,000 votes. The top 7 candidates, you can go to our website, freeandequal.org, and you can see that Robert F. Kennedy, Dr. Jill Stein, Dr. Cornel West, Claudia De La Cruz, Jasmine Sherman, Lars Mapstead, and Chase Oliver of various parties, Green Party, Libertarian, Independent, and so on, in the socialist world, have been invited to this debate. February 29th at Chelsea Television Studio. And yes, Rumble will be broadcasting it live, Pacifica, Epic Times, Zero Hedge has been reaching out, a lot of The New Yorker and more media. And we have 5 candidates confirmed, 5 of the 7. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Dr. Cornel West have been invited by the people and voted in.
So when you say invited by the people, I'm just curious how this unfolds. So I notice, you know, some names that are missing from that list. You know, I notice like Ron DeSantis is not on that list. I notice Nikki Haley's not on that list. I'm surprised by that. So I notice Donald Trump's not on the list. How does this work? How do people get to vote to bring people in for these presidential debates? Or they have to be independent? They have to not be party affiliated? Can you walk through the mechanism of this?
Any and everyone running for president had a chance to be voted in. There's over 1,500 people running for president. So our blockchain app, we allowed the people to vote whoever they wanted for the top 7 candidates. They were allowed 2 weeks, and over 330,000 people casted their vote via ranked choice voting through our blockchain voting app powered by Nexus.io. Colin Cantrell. His father, Jim Cantrell, co-founded SpaceX with Elon Musk, and we have a bigger vision building out to that blockchain app, which will transform our elections and bring about political transparency. So the people have voted in these top 7 candidates, and I welcome Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Dr. Cornel West to be there. We are having a debate. We have 5 confirmed candidates, Dr. Jill Stein, and the others that I mentioned. You can go to freeandequal.org and see the 5 confirmed candidates, and hopefully we'll have 7 come February 29th when the debate takes place.
Yeah, I would love to see. Yeah, hey, Robert F. Kennedy, Cornel West, if you're watching right now, we know their teams watch the show. Please, yes, be a part of this debate. We would love to hear from you on that stage. It'd be amazing. So the blockchain piece of this, do you see this as the future? How, for our audience that may be sitting there saying, whoa, how does this even work? Is this... you know, is the government involved in this blockchain process at all? Is this totally locked into that individual who makes that vote on that app? And we know they can only get to vote one time, and it's tied to that individual. How does this all work?
Well, the first phase that we launched for this vote is a beta version. So people simply had to sign up their cell phone number, and we did an audit on it and allowed the people. We'll have a full response next week of detail on the audit. It's a learning thing for me. And we're going to go into the actual app development come the second, probably third presidential debate, where we will have to do, it looks like, ID verification. I lean on experts like Nexus.io to guide us. The app will allow the people to vote on February 29th of the 7 or 5 confirmed candidates, hopefully 7, which candidate was their favorite. They can rank that post. They can also go in, we have on freeandequal.org where people can submit questions, but that app is going to eventually list every single candidate in office, running for office. And while blockchain is, right now we have paper ballots, right? You can cast a paper ballot. The mail-in ballot's a big issue now too, as it should be. You're not able to check and see that your vote has counted. Well, why can't we, or maybe one day we'll have, where you can do a paper ballot cast, but you also get a number when you do it, so it can be plugged on a blockchain ledger, and you can see that your vote was actually counted. The transparency of elections is very easy to achieve. Unfortunately, we have Democrats and Republicans alike in office that allow these electoral flaws to happen, from gerrymandering to these restrictive ballot access barriers. It is unconstitutional that independents like Dr. Cornel West and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have to collect over 938,000 ballot signatures just to get on the ballot in 50 states plus DC, while D's and R's are only 25 to 50,000. But the blockchain app, we have a way bigger vision. What's happening here is the spark of an independent movement. Clayton.
I love it. And I love that you also mentioned you have to use ID verification. Like, wow, imagine that. You have to actually be a human being with an ID to vote in this process.
That is what the Nexus.io team has recommended, and that's the direction we're going in. And imagine an app where you can go on and see every single candidate that's currently in office, that'll be running for office, and provides the tools, like click here to learn how to run for office. I ran for Secretary of State of California in 2010. I'm here to inspire many other people to run for office. So when we replace these and ours alike with accountable individuals, I see a lot of them that have technological backgrounds. Will they then implement blockchain voting into the system? Probably, and that will enable us, and we will see the power shift from the federal, state to local level where people can self-govern themselves. That's what I see happening in the future.
This is exciting. No, I'm really excited about this. I think this is the start of a movement. When you talk about the Presidential Election Commission, you talk about the Presidential Election Debate Commission, which really sets the stage for these presidential debates. I've always felt it was faulty over the years. I mean, you heard the back and forth from the campaigns and the candidates, and it seemed like an archaic system. When did you know that it was going to start to collapse? Because it seems like it has.
I mean, when something starts from a lack of purity, and the League of Women Voters originally created the presidential debates in the early 70s, and then it was co-opted, taken over, stolen from them by the Commission on Presidential Debates, and it's controlled and funded by the military-industrial complex, pharmaceutical, and so on. So when something is created from a false platform, in fact, the League of Women Voters, if you go to Wikipedia, stated the Commission on Presidential Debates has perpetuated a fraud on the American voters. And it has. It has created this grand illusion, this myth that there's only two parties, a uniparty, when in fact we have 1,500 people running for president of the United States for this cycle, which is really inspiring. So I foresee as we build out this presidential debate series, we'll be breaking out. Free and Equal Elections also has been hosting 8 years in a row annually, the United We Stand Festival, bringing together artists, conscious thought leaders, organizations, and people running for office. And we're going to be breaking out into a United We Stand tour into 25-26 and really focus on replacing majority of Congress and eventually all races with accountable individuals across the spectrum. It's a very big vision ahead.
Wonderful. I love the ambition here, and you're speaking to my entrepreneurial spirit, but also to my my American patriot spirit here. And I hope that we can return America to the people. That's the goal here. And I think it's been totally taken away from us. Now it's in the hand of the corporations, and it's in the hand of the deep state, the military industrial complex. You're absolutely right about that. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Cornell West, I hope we get to see you on February 29th at 8 p.m. On the Free and Equal Elections, on this massive, massive debate that you guys are putting on. So it is 8 p.m. It'll be streaming on Rumble. It'll be streaming on Zero Hedge and Epic Times. And that's amazing. Christina, any final words? Where can people go to learn more?
Well, Clayton, then go to freeandequal.org and donate, because like you, we don't sell out. It's the people that have funded this debate, and we're so grateful. Please go to freeandequal.org for more information, and you can also submit a question. We want to hear from you. We're going to hit the Julian Assange extraditing. Shame on the American government for even thinking that is okay. And we plan and hope to have also call out to Edward Snowden to submit a pre-recorded question about pardoning himself and Assange and many others, Leonard, Ross, whoever. We're going to hit the hard-hitting questions, and Tucker and others, we welcome those hard-hitting questions. So thank you so much, Clayton, for everything you do, and Natalie and the Redacted team.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Christina. So again, 8 p.m. on February 29th. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that's going to do it for us today on Redacted. We really appreciate it. Please make sure you subscribe to our newsletter. I forgot to mention that earlier in the show. We do a daily newsletter. It's totally free, and I think it brings a lot of value to your morning. We usually publish it at about 7:30 a.m. Eastern time is when you can expect it in your inbox. We cover like four or five of the big stories of the day. It's a perfect way to start your day. Again, it's totally free. All you need to do to get our daily newsletter is go to redacted.inc. That's the place to go, not .com. And then put in your email address, and you'll receive a welcome email from me from Clayton at redacted.inc. You just need to confirm it, then you'll receive this welcome email, because a lot of people say, hey, I signed up for the newsletter, but I never received it. You have to confirm it. So what happens is it might go to your spam folder. It might go to your junk folder. Google has labeled us as dangerous. Gmail has labeled us as dangerous. So there might even be a dangerous folder. I don't know. Anyway, you need to find it. Might be in some folder. And then just confirm it. And then tomorrow morning, on Thursday morning, you will receive the newsletter first thing in the morning. Again, just go to redacted.inc. So thank you all to all of you for joining us tonight here on Redacted. We really appreciate it. As always, we'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And we hope you all have a wonderful night, everyone. Bye.